second Sunday afternoon at this time, the National Broadcasting Company takes pleasure in presenting and joins the recital Sylvia Marlowe and Richard Dyer Bennett. Miss Marlowe plays the harp chord. Mr. Dyer Bennett sings songs to his own rude accompaniment. As this afternoon's program opens, Sylvia Marlowe invites you to listen to the music of Johann Sebastian Bach. Music in two forms, which Bach began to use early in life, and which remains his favorite form to the bitter end, namely, the prelude and fugue. The particular prelude and fugue Miss Marlowe plays are in the key of C minor. Bach has found an eloquent exponent in Sylvia Marlowe. Now Richard Dyer Bennett steps into the spotlight with 12-string Swedish lute in his hand. Richard Dyer Bennett begins with an 18th century English ballad by name, The Plowboy.
Sun-headed cowboy, as simple as need be, and an extraordinary plowboy, I whistle o'er the lea. But now, for a fortune, I drop his worst estate, and soon I'll be a butler, and wave my jolly face. When steward I'm promoted, I'll keep the patron's seat. master's coffers empty. My pocket's for to fill. When lolling in my chariot, so great a man I'll be. So great a man, so great a man, so great a man I'll be.
Richard Dyer Bennett, sex contribute. We interrupt this program to bring you a special broadcast.
Here's the bulletin. Washington. The president decided today, after Japan's attack on Pearl Harbor and Manila, to call an extraordinary meeting of the cabinet for 8:30 p.m. tonight, and to have congressional leaders of both parties join the conference at 9 p.m. And now we take you to Honolulu. Moment, please.
1234. Hello, it's me. Hello, it's me. This is Steve Hill in Honolulu, Hawaii. I am speaking from the roof of the Advertiser Publishing Company building. We have witnessed this morning the distant view of Pearl Harbor and the severe bombing of Pearl Harbor by enemy planes, undoubtedly Japanese. The city of Honolulu has also been attacked and considerable damage done. This battle has been going on for nearly 3 hours. One of the bombs dropped within 50 feet of KJU Tower. It is no joke. It is a real war. The public of Honolulu has been advised to keep in their homes and await results from the Army and Navy. There has been fierce fighting going on in the air and on the sea. The heavy shooting seems to be One moment, please. Ladies and gentlemen, we're standing by for a further word from Honolulu, and we expect to rejoin them in just a moment. However, here's a bulletin which has just come in to the NBC newsroom in New York. Nomura, the Japanese ambassador, and Kurusu, the special Japanese envoy, were at the State Department at the time of the White House's announcement of the attacks on Hawaii. The two Japanese went to see Secretary of State Hull at 1:35 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and remained about 20 minutes. And now we take you to Washington.
The White House in Washington has just come back to Secretary Early's office with word that the president is called. Here's Canada for the night at 8:30. Later in the meeting, the congressional leaders to discuss the ongoing bombing of Manila, of Honolulu, of the torpedoing of a cargo ship 1,300 miles from San Francisco, and set signals from another ship only 600 miles from our own coast by gasoline. And gave very clear the indication that the Japanese are busy with submarines within our own water. Immediately that the president heard the news flash to him, he gave the orders already prepared that he put it for the defense of the Navy. And then he gave out a speech. He told us it was obviously a part of a prepared statement of which he would hear more, for he is going to address Congress. He will give them a message. It may be a message asking for the declaration of war. And he said that this happened, this attack on Manila and Honolulu, happened without warning when both nations were at peace. And within a short time, within an hour of the time the Japanese ambassador Nomura and the special emissary Kurusu had gone to the State Department and handed the document to the Secretary of State with the Japanese reply to the Secretary's note of the 26th. And when the Secretary of State looked into that note, his face flushed with anger. And he said that he had never spoken an untruth to the Japanese. And when you read that document, he had never seen a document so full of untruth, such infamous falsehoods, he said, that he could not imagine that they would be spoken by any government or any nation. This reply came when the Japanese must have known what was happening. It is almost inconceivable, the surprise with which this attack has come. The men that are filling this room now, whose voices you probably hear behind me, have been called from every quarter of the city. They're the leading correspondents. And it came like a flash out of the blue. As I came down in a taxi cab, there was a broadcast which was being interrupted with this bulletin. The driver hardly believed what he said. I passed soldiers on the street. One of them said, "Yes, I know," laughed and went on. What I'm trying to explain is that we have hardly what is actually coming. But tonight we're going to hear a little more. The president has called in his cabinet for 8:30. At 9 o'clock, they're going to be joined by the leaders, the congressional leaders, the Speaker, Sam Rayburn, McCormick, Joe Martin on the Republican side, Bloom, Barton, Hill, Len McNary, and the others who he has recently called in when he has been discussing international matters. And it was stressed by Secretary Early that this meeting is rather a consideration of our international relations than actual military affairs, because the heads of the military committees were not called in. The president is assembling all the facts that he can, and as quickly as possible, he is going to transmit them in a message containing full information of the situation to Congress. And undoubtedly, that will be the consideration of whether or not a formal war will be declared. Already, Senator George has said that while this happened, partly in expectation, nevertheless, it was a surprise, and it means only one thing. He says it means an open declaration of war. And he added that it will put the United States on a war basis, which may last for 2 or 3 years. Only yesterday, I sat with Emissary Kurusu in the Japanese embassy. He smiled, talked pleasantly, and explained that there was still hope, that the only trouble was that we mustn't discuss principles, we must discuss the actual happening. He said that after a nation was at war for 4 years, that they must be treated with a certain sympathy and tact, that there would be no difficulty in arranging the situation between Japan and the United States if we laid aside for the moment the discussion of general principles which could be agreed upon later and discussed the realistic question. Earlier, the Japanese viewpoint expressed to me was this. The Japanese people are 90% against war, the Japanese spokesman said to me. What he said, the Japanese people, the majority of them, all of them, are willing to fight over the Chinese question. And then he went on to explain that China was a peculiar situation and must be so regarded. Nevertheless, the attention, the effect of these conversations have been such as to lead us to believe that, at least for the present, Japan was not to take any overt step, nor was she to give an answer which would be impossible for the United States to accept. it was a status quo. Nevertheless, there was a feeling here that Japan was merely putting off the evil day. And therefore, while the thing came as a shock, as all wars do, nevertheless, there was a feeling that at least it would be a period, perhaps 30 to 90 days, worthwhile, where we realized just exactly the direction that the trends were taking. I recall very well that I was sitting in the Reichsrundfunkhaus in Berlin when I carried the news that Hitler had launched his legions into Poland. And I must say that exactly the same feeling existed there among the populace at least. It came as a distinct shock. It came as a terrific blow to the people as a whole. And just as there I looked out the window and saw the people going up and down the street who had not had the news, so today when I hurried over to this newsroom with the rest of these men that are now crowding it, I had the same feeling because I knew the faces that I looked into, the tourists, the Sunday persons going for their walks, had no idea whatever what had actually happened or what it means. What it is to mean, we can only know as developments are revealed. And the dispatches at present are all being released here through the White House. They're coming into the White House from the War and the Navy Department, carried immediately to the President's office, and whenever possible, Secretary Steve Early brings them down and reads them to us in this crowded room, or one of the secretaries comes out, or we're called into his office. They are attempting to keep us in touch with every development as it takes place, and we will try to do the same for you as soon as it comes. That's all for the moment, and thanks very much.
Back in New York City, here's the bulletin. Honolulu, Japanese bombs killed at least 5 persons and injured many others, 3 seriously, in a surprise morning aerial attack today on Honolulu. The sky was filled with puffs of smoke from exploding shells fired by American Army and Navy anti-aircraft units. Whether surface vessels of the United States fleet were in action against the enemy could not be learned at once, but columns of water rising from the sea as shells hit the waters indicated a naval action. Viewed from the hills, back of Honolulu, where many city folk went to view the fight, columns of heavy black smoke went skyward from Pearl Harbor. And Washington. Senate leaders were preparing today for an emergency session tomorrow in anticipation of a message from President Roosevelt asking for a declaration of war against Japan. Berlin. A German spokesman declared tonight there could be no reaction from Germany to the announced Japanese air attack on Pearl Harbor until all sides of the case were at hand. And San Francisco. The Army and Navy went on a war basis on the Pacific seaboard today. All leaves were canceled, all furloughs revoked, and every man was ordered to report to his station. The commandant of the 3 naval districts on the West Coast appealed by every medium for every officer and man to report to his post. The commander of harbor defenses ordered, all coast artillery officers and soldiers of the harbor defenses are ordered to report to their stations immediately. All leaves and furloughs are canceled by order of the commanding general. Again, Washington. The Federal Bureau of Investigation announced today that it is completely mobilized and ready to deal with Japanese espionage and sabotage. Ottawa. Prime Minister Mackenzie King left his Kingsmere home today for Ottawa immediately after he was informed of the Japanese attack. In just a few minutes, we'll hear from NBC's Far Eastern experts, and one of whom is Upton Close. Another bulletin, the Secretary of War has just announced that all military personnel on active duty is to appear Monday in uniform. For the latest news on the Pacific situation, please keep tuned to this station.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Thank the makers of Hallmark greeting cards for their courtesy in relinquishing their broadcast period so that you might hear these latest news bulletins. We present a piano recital.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special broadcast.
We take you now to Washington. One moment, please. Go ahead, Washington.
From the newsroom in the White House in Washington, again. We've just received a copy of the message which the President delivered to the Emperor of Japan Saturday afternoon. And in that message, the President urges, addresses himself to His Majesty. He says at this moment, in the fervent hope that Your Majesty may, as I am doing, give thought to this definite emergency, the ways of dispelling the dark clouds, and that I am confident that both of us, for the sake of the peoples not only of our own great country, but for the sake of humanity and neighboring territories, have a sacred duty to restore traditional amity and prevent further death and destruction of the world. And he points out the specific issue that the people of the Philippines, the hundreds of islands in the East Indies, of Malaya, and of Thailand, are asking themselves whether these forces of Japan are preparing or intending to make attack in one or more of these directions. Well, the Japanese government answered that with a bomb over Honolulu and Manila, answered it with a torpedo that sent an American ship to the bottom, answered it with the threatening blows at a cargo ship within our own territorial waters off San Francisco. But the message is, I can give you a part of it. We have much time here. He begins by saying that almost a century ago, the President of the United States addressed the Emperor of Japan a message extending an offer of friendship of the peoples of the United States to the peoples of Japan. That offer was accepted. In the long period of unbroken peace, the friendship that followed, our respective nations, through the virtues of their peoples and the wisdom of their rulers, have prospered and substantially helped humanity. That's the way the President opens this message. Then he goes on to say that only in situations of extraordinary importance to our two countries need I address Your Majesty messages on matters of state. I feel that I should now so address you because of the deep and far-reaching emergency which appears to be in the formation. Developments are occurring in the Pacific area which threaten to deprive each of our nations of all humanity and all humanity of the beneficial influence of the long peace between our two countries. Those developments contain tragic possibilities. The people of the United States, believing in peace and in the right of nations to live and let live, have eagerly watched the conversations between our two governments during these past months. We have hoped for a termination of the present conflict between Japan and China. We have hoped that a peace in the Pacific would be consummated in such a way that nationalities of many diverse peoples could exist side by side without fear of invasion, that unbelievable burdens of armaments could be lifted for them all, and that all peoples would resume commerce without discrimination against or in favor of any nation. I am certain that it will be clear to Your Majesty, as it is to me, that in seeking these great objectives, both Japan and the United States should agree to eliminate any form of military threat. This second essential of attainment of the high objectives. More than a year ago, Your Majesty's government concluded an agreement with the Vichy government by which 5,000 or 6,000 Japanese troops were permitted to enter into northern French Indochina for the protection of Japanese troops which were operating against China and further north. And this spring and summer, the Vichy government permitted further Japanese troops to enter into southern
China. Hello?
Japanese military, naval, and air force have been
sent to southern Indochina in such large numbers as to create a reasonable doubt on the part of other nations that this continuing concentration in Indochina is not defensive and careful. And then he comes to the point that I mentioned before, stating that because these continuing concentrations in China have reached such proportions, and because they extend now to the southeast and southwest, the peoples of the Philippines and the Indies have begun to fear and attack. That was the last scene, the last item. But then he goes on to say, I'm sure that your majesty will understand that the fear of all these people is illegitimate fear, and as much as it involves their peace and their national existence, I am sure that your majesty will understand why the people of the United States, in such large numbers, with the stamp of the establishment of military naval air base, manned and equipped, so greatly as to constitute armed forces capable of measures of defense. The rest of the message I read to you, you can see how it was the last appeal, the answer to the argument that this country had offered continually, stating that those troops could not be going there for mere defensive purposes. Now we know the truth. They were not. That's all for the moment from Washington, and thanks very much.
While Borkit was talking in Washington, a wire came in, a bulletin that the Supreme Command of the nation's defense forces are now in conference at the White House. Secretary of War Stinson, Secretary of Navy Knox, and General George C. Marshall, Army Chief of Staff, were with President Roosevelt. Admiral Harold R. Stark, the Chief of Naval Operations, remained at his desk in the Navy Department. A bulletin from Honolulu. Parachute troops were sighted off Harbor Point today. And now for Navy men in the New York area. Here's a notice that all Navy personnel in 3rd Naval District are requested to report to their ship or station as soon as possible. And now, for the benefit of our listeners who may have missed our first direct contact report from Hawaii a few minutes ago, here is the text of this broadcast over NBC. We have witnessed this morning the attack of Pearl Harbor and a severe bombing of Pearl Harbor by Army planes, undoubtedly Japanese. The city of Honolulu has also been attacked and considerable damage done. This battle has been going on for nearly 3 hours. One of the bombers dropped within 50 feet of Tanti Tower. It's no joke. It's a real war. The public of Honolulu has been advised to keep in their homes and away from the Army and Navy. There has been severe fighting going on in the air and on the sea. And there was an interruption followed by this. We have no statement as to how much damage has been done, but it has been a very severe attack. The Army and Navy, it appears, now has the air and sea under control. Keep tuned to the station for further details. This is the National Broadcasting Company.